Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. We start with the good, and Jim, this doesn't come as a huge surprise, but it's always good to get confirmation of something like this. Most of the focus on the 2014 midterms for both parties has been on which party will control the U.S. Senate starting in January of next year. Most folks have largely come to the conclusion that Republicans are probably in good shape to hold on to the House, but now we have more evidence that that is not only the case this year, but possibly in the near term. This from Noah Rothman yesterday at Hot Air. Some Democrats are suggesting, however, that the party may be ceding control of that chamber to the GOP for the foreseeable future. And he goes on to talk about key races the Democrats thought they had good chances of winning, and now the DCCC is withdrawing funding from those races. Three Republicans who were thought to be in tough battles in Michigan are now no longer the targets. Iowa's Steve King, New York's Tom Reed, Jim Gerlach's old seat, the one he's leaving in Pennsylvania, Mike Fitzpatrick, Pennsylvania, and two usually vulnerable Republicans in California. DCCC mainly moving their money to try and shore up Democratic incumbents. So, Jim, that's definitely reassuring news and hopefully means more resources for the races that we definitely need to win the Democrats hold.
It's really quite plausible to say that Democrats will not control the House for the foreseeable future. And that some of this stuff is structural. They're always quick to say, it's all gerrymandering, you know, as if the Republicans invented gerrymandering in just the last year or so. Some of it is undoubtedly that they drew the lines trying to maximize the advantage to Republicans in some states. But a lot of it is that, look, the Democrats are the urban party of this country, which means you have quite a few, if not quite Charlie Rangel-style districts in which the Democrat wins 90% and the Republicans win 10%. You know, you have a lot of, like, really heavily Democratic districts. And, in fact, one of the reasons you're not expecting Republicans to win much more than maybe 12 House seats under a really good set of circumstances in this midterm election is that they're probably pretty close to their national ceiling. There aren't that many swing districts or purple districts left for Republicans to win. They did a really terrible job with them in 2006 and 2008, and they did a really good job with them in 2010. And there's, you know, they gave back a few of them in 2012, but not much. And so now basically where we are right now is what we can expect, give or take 5-10 seats in either direction, for the foreseeable future, unless something dramatic happens. And a good example of this, you look at what happened in 2006, there was a broad-based dissatisfaction and frustration with the Bush administration, the war in Iraq, and the direction of the country. There was that plethora of scandals, of the Abramoff scandal, and Bob Ney, and all these other guys getting tied up with that. And also kind of easily overlooked in that was that, you know, Rahm Emanuel was running the DCCC back then, and a big part of it was for them to find people who hadn't been in politics for very long, who didn't have long records in state government where you could say, they voted to raise taxes 46 times and stuff like that. Instead, they went looking for disastrous quarterbacks of the Washington Redskins in terms of Heath Schuler. You know, folks who were, you know, known for things outside of politics, and thus it wasn't easy to make the usual, and they could qualify to say, I'm not like all those other Democrats, I'm different, you can trust me. And they rode this to victory in 2006. After a cycle or two of them actually voting like liberal Democrats, all of a sudden the Heath Schulers of the world found it a lot tougher, and you saw the Republicans coming back and winning those swing districts again. So if you're a Democrat, the set of circumstances that worked for you in 2006, and then you obviously adding to that in 2008 with the wave of Obama voters, isn't here in the midterms and isn't looking great for you to be here in 2016. And so the question is going to be, you know, if you're the House Democrats, how do you win back the House under these set of circumstances? And the answers aren't particularly obvious. What's kind of got to be making even more unnerving to them is that the rest of the party isn't that interested in it nearly as much as obviously controlling the presidency and all of the leverage that gives you and keeping their majority in the Senate.
All right. On to the Bad Martini Now, and this can be found also in today's Morning Jolt. But it happened last night on the Greta Van Susteren Show on the record, which Jim is seen on frequently, I should point out. But this time she was speaking with California Congressman Duncan Hunter about the threat of ISIS. And he was talking about a number of things that need to be done to stop their advance. Number one, the Turks getting involved in a meaningful way. Secondly, the U.S. making sure that the Kurds are getting the weapons needed to fend them off and not just sitting in a warehouse in Baghdad because the government there won't let the Kurds have access to the weapons. And then he says, quote, they are going to be bombing American cities coming across from Mexico. And that obviously got Greta's attention. And here's how the rest of that chat went.
You say that they're coming in the southern border, which is, you know, changes all the dynamics. Do you have any information or any evidence that they are actually coming in the southern border now?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me what you know.
I know that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught coming across the Mexican border in Texas. There's nobody talking about
that?
It. Because I've asked the Border Patrol, Greta.
And the Border Patrol, they just let ISIS members come across the border?
No, they caught them at the border. Therefore, we know that ISIS is coming across the border. And if they catch 5 or 10 of them, then you know there's going to be dozens more that did not get caught by the Border Patrol.
Unless you think this is a partisan issue, Jim reports that New York Democratic Congressman Tim Bishop recently warned that up to 40 radicalized U.S. citizens who have fought alongside ISIS have already returned to the U.S. where they could pose a terrorist threat. And he thinks there's about 100 others in that category as well that could be returning soon. So, Jim, it's one thing to talk about how the Turks should be doing more work, and they should. But when the threat is this close, that really makes you nervous.
Duncan Hunter does not seem like a nut job. He says this based upon conversations with the Border Patrol. You assume that he's not hallucinating these conversations, you know, that he's had this. No. What's odd about that is you figure that if this was the case, this would be huge news. Now, maybe there's some sort of really important national security reason to not let ISIS know that we've caught their guys or that we're tracking their guys. The Democratic congressman says that we know they're in the country and kind of suggests that they're under FBI surveillance. We've been talking about this threat for a good long while. If this is actually happening, it's really unnerving. And question like, you know, what are they here to do? What are they trying to do? Do we have all of them under surveillance, or do we only have some of them under surveillance? All the more reason to kind of, you know, enhance and improve our border security. Those of us who have been banging the table about this issue for a really long time have been warning about a vulnerability to terrorists sneaking into the country, and here we are. If Duncan Hunter is telling the truth, and there's no reason to think that he would, you know, be just making this all up, then the nightmare scenario we talked about has already happened.
Let's stay with ISIS for the crazy martini now, and this is courtesy of Politico. Former President Jimmy Carter is criticizing President Barack Obama's Middle East policy, saying he has shifting policies and waited too long to take action against ISIS. In an interview published Tuesday in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the 39th president said the Obama administration, by not acting sooner, allowed ISIL to build up its strength. Quote, we waited too long. We let the Islamic State build up its money, capability, and strength and weapons while it was still in Syria. Then, when it moved into Iraq, the Sunni Muslims didn't object to their being there, and about a third of the territory in Iraq was abandoned. He went on to say that now two former secretaries of defense, Gates and Panetta, have called into question the president's lack of positive action when it comes to crises like these. So, Jim, when the guy who was pretty powerless on the Iranian hostage crisis and the guy who was behind Desert One tells you you're doing a lousy job combating radical Muslims, you're doing a pretty lousy job.
Yeah, that's got a sting. And you can only imagine the sort of snarky rejoinders the administration could come up with. Perhaps what kind of just jumps out about that, though, is that this is no longer really a it's certainly not a partisan issue. A just kind of, you know, flat out question of we did not do what we needed to do regarding ISIS, right? This is not a success. This is not handling security the way we expect it by our elected leaders and our national security state. And, you know, the Panetta book is kind of enhancing this, and it kind of is a you know, what we had been saying about Obama for a long time, that there's kind of this naive belief that these things will take care of themselves, the problem won't be so bad, and affect Americans. And, well, here we are, a very unnerving reports, you know, that we mentioned in that second martini, and Jimmy Carter saying, look, you know, non-intervention and not responding and hoping the problem will go away is just not going to function any further.
Man, when Jimmy Carter says you're not aggressive on foreign policy, that's just not good. Well, on those thrilling last two martinis, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Weekend's coming, folks. Cheer up. There you go.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.